There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk this hour. Your big part at 343-0106. That's the text line. And a lot to talk about this hour. We'll get in some statewide politics because I got Todd Stacey on. And that's what we do when Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News joins us. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. First of all, like I do each time, but I think it's worth doing. If you people have not heard you before on with me, tell people what Alabama Daily News is. What are you all about?
Well, we are a state and national campaign and politics and government news platform. And what we do is just break it down really easily. We give you the top five stories of the day every day, tell you what happened, why it matters, and what's next. And that could be anything from what's happening, you know, here in Montgomery where I live, or up in D.C. where I've worked for a while. We cover a range of politics and political issues. But the best way to get it is to sign up for the daily email that goes out about 8 o'clock every morning. And that's you can access that via the website. It's aldailynews.com. And you can subscribe for free right there on the homepage. Just click the button. And you can subscribe and get the daily news right there in your inbox.
I tell you what, y'all, I've been doing it now for, I guess, months and months and months, and I like it. I recommend it to y'all. It's there. It's ready for you in the morning. It gives you some good takes. Somebody has done the legwork for you before you get started with your morning on these stories. And I want to, you know, Todd, I want to get to some of the national and your commentary on kind of the stakes here for the control of Congress question coming up for the midterms. But first, let's keep it down home. And you actually put a note in the email today. Your campaign profile stories on both Maddox and Ivey are going to be published tomorrow and on Wednesday, right?
That's right. I'm publishing the one on Maddox first, and then Governor Ivey's will be on Wednesday, hopefully, if everything goes to plan. And what happened here is I really wanted to do a deep dive into the candidates, to travel around with them, to kind of get to know what it's like to be in their shoes for a day and really cover it in depth, more in depth maybe than we get normally. And both campaigns were nice enough to let me come along and travel. I spent a day with Walt Maddox in the Wiregrass. It was actually the last day of September, so it's a few weeks late, but it kind of takes that long to put it together. When you read it, you'll know what I mean. But it just, you know, it'll follow him around the Wiregrass as he goes and campaigns and tries to sell his plans, sell his policies to the Wiregrass, which, as it happens, is a pretty conservative area. So he's kind of in enemy territory, and that makes for some interesting little tidbits. I also traveled with Governor Ivey, also to the Wiregrass. That was interesting because it was supposed to be a Mobile day. The day we had scheduled was going to be Mobile and Baldwin counties, but the hurricane happened. So, it hit Dothan and the Wiregrass pretty bad. So they had to scrap the plans for Mobile and go down to the Wiregrass to do some hurricane assessment work. So, you know, we changed plans and went down to the Wiregrass, and I followed her all around there, traveling around in the helicopters. That was kind of neat. So you'll get to see all of that and just sort of how it how each candidate is going about their business, selling their plans to the electorate. And they're both very different, obviously, but there are some common themes. So I'm looking forward to everybody reading them.
Yeah, okay. And one slight question. I mean, you said, you know, the enemy territory there. Where would be, for Walt Maddox, where would be home turf? I mean, it seems like any corner of the state you can go to, I can, show you, conservative bent, right? In general. I mean, I guess with the Black Belt would be the exception?
Yeah, definitely. Anywhere where there's majority African American, you know, voters, you're going to have a edge for Democrats. And we went to one such county. We went to Bullitt County, Union Springs. But you know, I think where he's counting on votes are probably Jefferson County. They're, you know, the northern part of the state has really grown, and there's a lot of new voters, a lot of younger voters. I really think they're banking on that as part of their election strategy. You've got both college towns, you know, Auburn or, you know, Lee County and Tuscaloosa County, and obviously Madison County. So really, they're looking at the urban centers as their, where they're going to try to get out the vote. But the reason he's going to these smaller areas is he says that, you know, every vote counts. It doesn't matter if the vote comes from Coffee County or, you know, Jefferson County. It counts just the same. So he's kind of doing a courtesy, saying, look, if I don't even show up, they probably don't even have a reason to vote for me. But if you go and, you know, show up and tell them that you care about them, maybe that'll make a difference. So that's what he's banking on.
Okay. Well, you're going to tell people about why to vote for you, but it sounds like, and I know that that's going on this bus tour for Walt Maddox, and he's talking about some of his plans. We can get into that. But what makes the statewide news, right, what makes the overall narrative is not, you know, get out the vote or what he's, you know, what his plans are. It's without say, I'm not saying the governor's old. I'm not saying she's in bad health. I'm just worried that there's a cover-up. I mean, Todd, come on, man. This is transparent.
Well, you know, I think I wrote the other day that everybody knew this was coming. You know, I'm talking about the quote-unquote mini-stroke, accusations of a mini-stroke, and now we've moved to, oh, it's a cover-up, and they've been abusing, you know, their office and everything. Everybody knew this was coming. It was just a matter of when and how it would be deployed. What I found really interesting about the accusations of this, you know, stroke and cover-up on behalf of the Ivy team is that it comes 3 years later. They're talking about something that happened in 2015, in August of 2015. In August of 2015, that's when Donald Trump announced he was running for president.
Wow.
Now, we had not even heard about Bentley and his affairs and things. Now, this is 3 years ago, and it's interesting to me that Spencer Collier, who's levying these accusations, waited that long, waited until, you know, 3 weeks before the election to actually say, hey, all this stuff happened. So I think that right out the gate makes a lot of people skeptical. It makes me skeptical just as far as motives. But, you know, 3 years later, they're saying, you know, a trooper was silenced because he was demoted. Well, Ivy released records that said that wasn't the case, that nobody was demoted. So, you know, it's a last minute, hey, we can maybe change the trajectory of the race if we have some kind of gotcha moment, some game-changing moment. I'm not really convinced that it's going to be that, you know, that they need.
I mean, how does something like that, even if it, like you pointed out, that how long ago it was and how some of these pieces of, we'll say, circumstantial evidence, you know, I mean, things have been presented that don't, I mean, the trooper wasn't demoted. How does that change the politics? Is it to motivate people to stay home, or do you think there's a thought in the Maddox campaign that people would change and all of a sudden vote a different way? They would vote Democrat instead of Republican.
Well, when I sat down with Maddox, you know, he walked me through their polling, and the numbers were off the record, but they basically pointed to the fact that, you know, Kay Ivey is incredibly popular, mostly because she's incredibly well known. She has approval ratings in the 60s, but her, you know, she's so well known, whereas he's not well known at all. And their essentially what they need to do is bring down her favorability. And that means, you know, people that are just generally positive about Kay Ivey and willing to go out and support her. And they think that if they can bring that down just a little bit, just, you know, 8-10 points, then that can make a difference. So that's a tall task. And, you know, here's this that's come. The big question is if there are going to be other accusations that come out in the next 14 days. I'd say it's likely that something else will come out, but as of this morning, they're more just trying to bleed this out into other stories, you know, into kind of tentacles of other stories. But I've not really seen anybody except their sort of chosen media really jump on it.
Hey, we're coming back. I want to talk more about this. We're talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. You know, you saw some of the things that were at least other Republicans trying to roll out against KIV in the primaries, and you saw what that got them. We'll see what maybe those ideas will be, and we'll talk about Governor Ivey as well and some of the polling and these last 14 days to election.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120, FM Talk 106.5, online, fmtalk1065.com, Facebook, Twitter. For some reason, Instagram. We'll get pictures of stuff, Dalton. I don't know. We'll get pictures of, maybe we'll get pictures of Todd Stacey and populate our Instagram with that. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. And lots to talk about here as we are, 14 days out from the midterm, the general election, and Maddox versus Ivey. And it looks like all rounds at this point that I've seen have gone to Governor Ivey, right? I mean, it's, if we're scoring this one by the days of the campaign, I think the prevent defense is working here.
Oh, there's no question. And, you know, polling at this point indicates anywhere from a, you know, Ivey 58, 59, even there are some that have her in the 60s. You know, that's a pretty wide margin with 14 days out. I could see, you know, there will be a surge of Democratic voters in Alabama, just the same as there will be everywhere else. So I could see how it gets down to 56, 55, but unless there's a game-changing moment, unless there's a big reason that shifts the electorate, you know, here in these last 2 weeks, you know, I see her winning big.
All right, let's talk about what may be thrown. If once this one, the tentacles, as you said, have reached out on this and found no, you know, made no purchase out there, what would be next? If it's not the, hey, we're not saying you're old, we're not saying you're unhealthy, we're worried about the cover-up. Mm-hmm. Where do they go next? I mean, do they go? I mean, think about the Republican primaries. You had a bunch of things thrown against KIV here. I mean, even Scott Dawson coming on and making intimations about the sexuality of the governor.
Yeah, and I think that was a big lesson learned for not just this campaign, but future campaigns. You know, you think back to May, that's when it happened. I think it feels like a lifetime ago, mm-hmm. but back in May, Scott Dawson scheduled this media tour where he, you know, released some contracts from ADECA that were the state dealing with an LGBT group. And, you know, he wasn't saying that she was, homosexual. He was just saying these are questions, you know, these are contracts we should question. Well, everybody knew what he was doing. You don't schedule a media tour like that and just raise the questions and be as glib as he was.
He got blasted, man. He got
it
blasted.
It was brutal. I've really never seen anything like it because, and they were warned. They knew what they were doing. I don't think they came up with the information. I really don't. I think it was given to them. And, you know, he's sitting there at 10%. What's the risk? You know, what do they have to lose? So they roll out with this information. Of course, State Representative Patricia Todd, who is gay, you know, pounces on it and makes a very ill-advised tweet, basically trying to out the governor. And the whole thing just backfires. First of all, Governor Ivey quickly defended herself and said, hey, not only am I not gay, that's a really terrible thing to say about somebody, you know, or to accuse somebody of. So the whole thing just backfired. Scott Dawson went on, I know he was on your show, he went on multiple other shows, and just had a really tough time explaining why he would make such a personal attack. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares.
Right. I mean, it was like such a, like, why? But yeah, you said something that people had said back then, too. Well, if you're at only polling at 10%, you know, then if what you're about to do is wrong, then you just, if 10% is all you get, then you move on, do something else. You know, you don't keep.
I agree. And here's the lesson. I said it was a lesson. What that did to Scott Dawson, look, by all accounts, he was surging in the race. It probably was never going to be enough to make the runoff, but he was gaining.
Uh-huh.
He was also gaining in just sort of stature and clout. I know a lot of Republicans who thought, man, this guy really makes sense. He's an outsider.
Talks a good game.
There's a place for him.
Yep.
Right. Maybe next time. Maybe there's something else he can run for. He can be a leader in the party.
Mm-hmm.
And overnight, he lost all that respect within the Republican Party, and or at least within a significant portion of it. It also was a heavy price for Patricia Todd, who lost a job that she was going to have down in Florida, working at an LGBT group down there. So that lesson back in May reverberates to today. And I that's why I think that this gambit from the Maddox campaign, number one, I don't really think it's going to pay off in the long run. But number two, they could even have some backlash from it, in that Alabama voters think, hey, a little too personal. We've seen this play before. You know, we're not having it. So it's a risk to take. But again, they're in a place where they have to take risks, and I guess they feel like this is the only thing they got.
All right, looks like a couple other items. If just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. We'll talk more about how to get that email delivered to your inbox each weekday morning. Looking down the ballot here to the lieutenant governor's race. I tell on myself because I like to do that, make sure everybody's on. I was asked for a snap name by Jeff Poore the other day. We were standing there in the studio, and he said, tell me right now, who is a Democrat running for lieutenant governor? And I could not come up with it. And I had like 35 seconds he gave me, and I could not. As soon as he said Will Boyd, I knew it, but I could not come up with it. That even though Will Ainsworth isn't a big splash, at least down here for name brand, Will Boyd maybe even less.
Yeah, and you know, I've met Will Boyd. It was actually down there. It was in Bowen County at the Press Association lunch, and he's a great guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's running for the right reasons and trying to get his name out there. But
the name's not
Alabama.
Out
there. Yeah, there's just not a lot of money out there. There's not a lot of interest in that. So, you know, you can be a nice guy and you can try your hardest, but when you don't have the money to push your name out, to really get your name out there, it's a really tough uphill battle, really, for any Democrat. The only reason Walt Maddox, you know, has a shot is, you know, he's been running since August of 2017.
Right.
He does have some money. He's fundraised pretty well. And he's got, you know, Democrats can only really afford maybe one big push this election cycle. Trying to get an entire ticket elected is a tough task. So, you know, you feel bad for Will Boyd. That you at least want to have people know his name, but that, you know, a lot of times that costs money, and they don't really have much.
Yeah, it was. It's an embarrassment for me that I, you know, couldn't come up with it off the top of my head for a second. But I mean, just trying to say, you know, if in my position, if it took me over 30 seconds to come up with it, that's going to be tough when people go and look at their ballot. All right, let's talk about Attorney General. And another one where obviously the incumbent now, Marshall, has the name brand, or does he? Because his opponent has a pretty famous last name in Alabama politics.
He does. Obviously, Joseph Siegelman. I mean, everybody's going to remember that name. The problem with that is it's a two-edged sword. I mean, a lot of people do not remember Governor Siegelman fondly. He, you know, he was not thrown out of office because of the conviction, but he was convicted, I guess, 2-3 years later. And people just sort of associate him with the crimes he was later convicted of. You know, that's baggage, and it has nothing to do with Joe. He's a nice guy. If you've seen him, I've seen him on the trail and interacted with him. Fine speaker, very relatable. Talks about things. You know, a good candidate, but as much as his last name probably helps him with a lot of Democrats who think fondly of the Siegelman administration, it dooms him with a lot of Republicans who do not wish to go back to anything even close to a Siegelman administration.
And walk us through this one, Todd, because you have you're talking about name recognition. You have, for Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, you have Tom Parker, the Republican, but you have Bob Vance Jr., the Democrat running. I'll tell you right now, I've seen some signs for Bob Vance in yards that I've seen Republican signs in the past.
Yeah, and this is probably going to be the closest race that we have on the ballot this year. And there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, Tom Parker is as close as you're going to get to a Roy Moore, who obviously is pretty controversial. Now, I caveat that and say Tom Parker has nothing close to the name recognition and the general baggage that Roy Moore has. Not even close.
Right.
But the Vance campaign has been trying to push that narrative. And Parker and Moore were very close as far as their legal stances. Vance obviously narrowly lost to Roy Moore back in, I guess it was 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people feel like maybe he's got a shot to do something different. If people are going to split the ballot in any way, maybe Chief Justice might be it. I think it'll be close. I don't think it'll be enough. One problem, and I don't know if voters make this connection or not, One problem Vance has is his wife, Joyce Vance, who is a former U.S. attorney in Birmingham, is on MSNBC every day just about criticizing Trump and criticizing Republicans. And that's just, I don't know, maybe that goes unnoticed, but I certainly have noticed it.
Yeah, it's
not
a been,
good way to
yeah, we
appeal
mentioned
to Trump voters.
Yeah, we have mentioned it the other day, and it doesn't seem to be part and parcel of the main ad campaign coming out. I'm up against a break. Can you hold on one more second here? Because I do want to come back and ask you a couple more questions. I know we're just up against the hard break, as they call it in the business. So we'll check the news and come right back. More with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Grab some of your texts as well at 343-0106.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Paul Feinbaum Show. That's when Dalton will probably, for whatever period of time the discussion of the Alabama-Tennessee game goes on, he will not have the radio on in his office here at FM Talk 106.5. Just a guess. I've said nothing. I was so good. I've been good all day until 1:36 on a Monday. I've been beyond reproach. Just relax, smoking cigars. Also continuing our conversation with Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News and talking about some Alabama politics here. And also remind folks, Todd, the website and the newsletter.
Yeah, it's aldailynews.com. Real easy. Right there on the homepage, there's a button that says subscribe. And if you give me your name and email, you're signed up for the Daily News Digest. That's a morning email that comes out every day about 8 o'clock with all the day's news. I give the top five stories. We say what's happening, what's next, you know, why it matters. I also offer all the headlines from other outlets around the state and the front pages. I'm an old newspaper guy, so I really like, if I can't get all the papers, I like at least seeing what the front pages say, what all the headlines are. So, yeah, aldailynews.com. Subscribe, and I'll send you an email every morning.
All right. Before we went to the news break there, we were talking about the Chief Justice Supreme Court race here, and Tom Parker, Republican versus Democrat, Bob Vance. And you said, in your opinion, probably this is the tightest of the races?
I think this one is going to be the closest on the ballot. Does Vance have a chance to win? Maybe. It kind of depends what happens here at the very end. If Parker can, Parker has not been very good at fundraising up until now. Now he's finally gotten some money in the race, finally gotten his ads out there. Mm-hmm. But Vance has been right there every step of the way. In fact, he's probably spent more leading up to this. So, but, I think people are still largely voting straight ticket, and it's just going to be hard for any Democrat to overcome that straight ticket voting. But if anybody has a shot, it's probably Bob Vance.
Speaking of things Democrats have to overcome, Todd, I've talked about it last hour. You and I talked about it some off the air. I put this story up on the Twitter feed so people can check it out. Our buddy Jeff Poore has a story up over at Yellowhammer News, and it is a letter from Joe Reed, so chair of the Democrat, the ADC. And I don't think people are disagreeing the amounts, because I'm looking at some other campaigns are asked for $2,500, some are asked for $25,000. But to a simple guy like me, man, this looks like a shakedown, where it says, it comes from, letter y'all comes from Joe Reed. If you weren't listening last hour, and just a part of this, it says, it has come to my attention, this is Joe Reed writing to Democrat candidates, it has come to my attention that some candidates have discussed withholding their GOTV money, the get out the vote money, in the black community through the ADC and other organizations in the November 6th general election. Whether this rumor is true or false, I do not know, but I wish to warn those who counsel and those who embrace this political folly to do so at the grave risk to their campaign and perilous danger to their election. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Joe Reed, you got to give it to him. I mean, he finds ways to make elections about him. For anybody that's sort of worked in politics over the last, I mean, you can go back 30, 40 years. Myself, it only goes back about 15 years. But, I mean, nobody's surprised by the fact that Joe Reed wants to force candidates once again to, kind of pony up, give to the Democratic fund that he operates, the walking around money, so to speak. I'm not surprised one bit by that. The fact that he would put it in a letter is a little irresponsible, and it probably happened before. Like, he probably sent these letters before, no question.
Right.
The difference is now he's got half the party turned against him, and the people that got maybe even more than half the party. And so the people that got these letters were quick to turn it around and send it to the media, even the conservative media, at that.
Yeah, it's Democrats. I think people need to understand that Democrats received this, and I'm calling it the shakedown letter from Joe Reed, and they were bothered about it enough that they shared it out there. So they didn't keep it. They were offended enough that they said, hey, here's what's going on. And is that part and parcel what, I've said that the structure, from an outsider looking in, the structure of the Alabama Democrat Party right now is one of the biggest assets to the Republicans in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, and, going conspiracy theory here for a minute, I think that's probably why whoever leaked this to Yellowhammer, it's probably why they chose Yellowhammer, because this is really embarrassing for Democrats, and it's embarrassing for Reed, and how much better... how much more embarrassing is it that it comes from an outlet that is going to just slam them for it, Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe even be part of it is, let's take our punishment now to maybe change things in the future. But as Reed got real, or he kept his chairman in place, Nancy Worley, when they had a chance to oust her back during the summer. So nothing's going to change for the next couple of years.
Well, people if they didn't follow that, Todd, enlighten people. Remind them that there was this play. They know that, somehow Doug Jones was involved, and there was a play for power of the Democrats in Alabama. But Joe Reed wins with keeping Nancy Worley in place. Who was the other? I mean, what was the other path possible?
So during the last election for chairman of the Democratic Party, you had a lot of folks that wanted a change in direction because Joe Reed has controlled things. He's not the chairman, but he controls the chairman, Nancy Worley, because they have a really messed up way of counting votes. And basically, through a court order, if they Joe Reed gets to decide how many minority votes can come out of the woodwork and vote for a candidate. So basically, he controls the... I mean, it's like old, I don't even want to say it's old school politics.
It's Tammany Hall, man.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It's Tammany Hall. I mean, it is straight
sure.
up. I mean, it
and people are tired of it because of stuff like this. Because they're notorious about wasting money. They're notorious about kind of steering money to their pet causes while not really helping the larger cause of the Democratic Party. So people are fed up with it. So your next generation Democrats, those who really want the party to do well in the future, your Doug Jones, your Walt Maddoxes, they got behind Peck Fox. Peck Fox I don't want to call him old. He's been around politics for a long time. He's worked in government. He's worked in politics. He's an old hand, I would just say, and very well respected in the party. So they put him up as a challenger, and he won the votes. He won the first ballot, but when they came in and allowed all these other votes to come in through these twisted party rules, of course Nancy Worley won by like 5 votes. I mean, it's just like you said, it's kind of Tammany stuff, and it does not help their case moving forward.
And it is the state of affairs right now with the Democrats in the state of Alabama. And as always, we appreciate it. Remind folks, it's tomorrow, right? They start getting your takes on both candidates running for governor.
That's right. I've got my profile story coming out on Walt Maddox. I traveled around with him a few weeks ago and just wrote really the whole, the whole story of what he does on the campaign trail, what his staff does. It's a day in the life of his campaign. That's tomorrow. And on Wednesday, I'll have coming up Kay Ivey's story. I travel around with her as well. And we'll just have, I'm running them back to back so that everybody can get a little bit of a taste. But It's aldailynews.com. Look for those tomorrow and Wednesday.
Todd, as always, we appreciate it. We'll have you back on, of course, more times before Election Day. We got to talk about some ballot amendments again, too, because even though you and I had an in-depth discussion, I still have people that send me the scratching their head emoji and a link to the ballot amendments. So,
you bet. Anytime.
All right. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, checking in. And we're coming right back. Grab some calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. And Dalton, do we have any more on traffic eastbound on I-10? Anywhere getting near somewhere they may possibly be selling a lot? I know that why would people from Alabama, it's against the law here, they would never leave the state to go buy lotto tickets, but I just have a feeling there'll be a lot of Alabama tags at the first convenience store across the line. Yeah, y'all in South Baldwin, y'all get, yeah, you get to go to the, you get to go to the floor of Bama to do that, so quit showing off, right? 1:45, be right back.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, what if this possible caravan moving north, what if the caravan's just a promotional item for the upcoming, whenever it happens, season of Game of Thrones, Dalton? Maybe it's just some kind of, they'll talk about the I don't know. No, they wouldn't be the White Walkers. Speaking of which, did you see the PETA story? I mean, these stories, I always just throw them away because of the ridiculousness of what is said here. And who is saying it? But I'll go ahead and just be on the record that we have done the story. Cow's milk. Now, story from KRON out of San Fran. Cow's milk is allegedly a symbol used by white supremacists, according to PETA. You know, PETA, the acronym for People Eating Tasty. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, not eating tasty animals. In a recent statement, the animal advocate organization explained that dairy milk has been the drink of choice for white supremacists, because the dairy industry inflicts extreme violence on other living beings, end quote. At this point, let's stay with the animals. Y'all have truly, PETA, if you hadn't before, which I thought you have truly jumped the shark now. The drink, 9 out of 10 white supremacists drink milk. They say it does the bigot body good. I mean, what? According to PETA, here's a quote. Some people might be surprised to learn that cows used in the dairy industry are slaughtered after about 5 years because their bodies are so spent from being pregnant. And then they go and said, PETA is the, I mean, I'm sorry, milk is the choice of white supremacists. They said the white stuff isn't the right stuff. You know what, PETA? Do more of this, please. Do more of this. More of these things, please. They say PETA's linking, here's their defense. This is good. PETA says their defense of this is, the concept of white supremacy by saying cows are controlled by humans, similar to the mindset of a white supremacist. Holy cow. All right, go to the phones, 343-0106, 343-0106. That Joe Reed story, too, by the way. Y'all, this is going to be, you'll hear about it later in the week. It'll get traction then, but this is it's a shakedown. And the political, nothing new. I mean, there's no naivete here saying, oh, I can't believe this is going on. I'm shocked. Come on. It goes on all the time. What shocks me is the public, just like, I'm not even hiding it anymore. And it also shows you the lack within the Democrat Party of the lack of groupthink. There are people within the Democrat Party that are saying, you know, no way, I'm not into this. This is not my thing. All right, let's go to the phones. And Thomas and Theodore next. Hey, Thomas.
Good afternoon, Sean. It's just how it says they're stupid. Yeah, they're stupid. Hey, I'm more concerned about the barley. Because of the global warming, barley is going to be almost impossible to grow, and then it's going to be so expensive. Our beer prices are going to go through the roof.
So the
and I knew a guy had a plantation in Brazil. He grew peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good friend of my mother's that married, and she visited him down there in Brazil. I was there, but anyway, I called him. Mannix.
Yes.
First he says debate. She's not debating. Now he's going H. Is he got any? Is he going to come out with some TV ads and say, this is what I want to do? I want to do the lottery or anything, or is it just going to stay hidden till election day?
Thomas, he's not saying she's old. He's not worried about her being old. He is saying nothing about her being old or her health. You misunderstand. It's not about old health.
Oh,
it's about the possible cover up.
I understand. See, I'm 67. I'm old.
I mean, what a ridiculous transparent.
That's a problem I always have. But Nancy Pelosi today, you know what she says? She says, if they held the midterms today, the Democrats would win the House. Then she goes on to say, listen to this. She goes on to say, but I can't guarantee what happens tomorrow. So the hypothetical prediction is only for the next couple of hours.
So something that couldn't be proven. She could say, I guarantee you something
right,
that can't
right.
happen today. If it did happen today, I would be back in the speaker's chair.
Yeah, but she says she can't control the future. Only the present right now.
Sorry, I mean, do we need to?
I love you.
Thank you, Thomas.
Maybe you can figure it out. I can't figure it out. Have a great day.
We'll do. Maybe we need to go back to our mega mix of all the Pelosi, where she starts talking about Twitter. When then candidate and now President Trump was getting attention for Twitter. She's like, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was like something like, I do the Twittering too. I have people that do the tweets, or it was too funny. Like her trying to navigate around that. Yeah, she did say today she's pretty comfortable she will be Speaker again if the Democrats win the House in November, which is a whole other story I think is pretty interesting. And often the discussion is set up so much on the Republican versus Democrat, and you just got to talk about that without looking inside parties. And there's some really interesting stories inside parties. One of the stories are the Democrats that say, the heck you are. There are definite movements afoot within Democrats that say, no way. For no Pelosi as Speaker. So there's a little interesting intrigue there. First of all, Pelosi has to have her prediction come true, and second of all, you have to have a situation where you have people sign up. I'm sorry, there's a million other things going on in our studio here. So let's just go to the phones. Harlan is in Daphne. Hey, Harlan.
Hey, I have a question. We've got all these immigrants that are walking across the country to...
Wannabe immigrants. Wannabe. They're not immigrants yet. They want to be.
Right. Okay. You're right. Who's feeding them?
I don't know. I have no answer for you. I don't know that.
Yeah, because, you know, I was in the Army, And somebody's got to be feeding them.
Yeah, what is the thing, like army travels on its stomach or something like that?
That's right.
And Harlan, I don't have an answer for you. I will look into that. I've got no answer for that. So I'm not sure where they're getting food. Are there food trucks? Can somebody, thank you, Harlan, are there food trucks traveling with the caravan? Are there... to set up, I don't know. And seriously, though, I mean, while it's, I get what Harlan's saying, I mean, you would think if you show up with this immigrant caravan anywhere and there's families and children and people are starving, you're going to have resources to feed them. You know, I think most decent human beings would want to feed the other human beings, turn them back and send them back to their homes, yes, but make sure that people have food and water. You know, I mean, that's like... Hey. I don't know, maybe they're doing shakedowns and asking for donations. Y'all check out that story of many over on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 1065. I'm out of here. Paul Feinbaum next.